Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. I am Brandon Anyard, and I am with
Aiden Wood.
I should allow you to just like open it up one of these days so that.
It's fine.
Yeah.
You've got a thing going.
Yeah, it works, right? So, how have you been doing, Aiden?
I've been doing really well. I didn't actually sleep last night, though. And I'm running completely on Adderall and coffee right now, which I feel like I've been hiding that pretty well. But
I can't tell. And here I got a pretty decent. I want to say night sleep, but for people who know when you edit podcasts and you're a writer, it's not really a night sleep. It's like you go to bed at like 5 in the morning and kind of wake up at about 12 noon. But you were actually asking me some crossword questions before the show started. And I feel like I got like 2 kind of right. So I felt pretty good about that.
That was good. And you got them without any of the crossings. For those of you who don't know, I do some crossword construction. And I was working on a puzzle before we started recording with my friend Max. And so I just ran some of the clues by Brandon before we recorded.
And I take any chance I can get to answer trivia questions because it's like, I was in Vancouver yesterday. As people who listen here know, I'm a fanatic about rugby and quite a lot of different things. But so I was up there for Vancouver Sevens. And for those of you who don't, I'll make it short because none of you really care that much. But Rugby Sevens is a World Series with national teams. So like the top teams are usually like South Africa, New Zealand, Fiji. And the USA has been doing pretty good this year. I love so many different teams, like the players. So for me, it's like I don't really go there necessarily root for one country in particular. I mean, I know USA is my home and I love seeing USA do well. But anyways, what I was going to get at is, of course, being up in Canada, which I have family there, and my mom was born Canadian, but they don't know that, of course, the other people in Canada, it's only they can smell it on you. And so I had just my USA toque on, and so they could tell, you know, I was obviously kind of rooting for USA, even though I had a South Africa jersey. And I noticed that there's like not a lot of love at all for, and I'm sure that's like, there's always the rivalry, right? But I got home and I was telling my mom and her husband about this, and her husband's like, can you blame them though? And I'm like, it's always been a thing, but no, I do think there was a little bit more animosity towards the U.S. yesterday, just because of like, because they actually had like Trump, like big heads there, like waving around, which is kind of funny. They're like using that like to like be against us, these big giant faces of Trump. And yeah, it's effective, I suppose. But there was not a lot of love for USA. They were very happy. The US had just won last week. USA was 4th in Canada. I think Canada was very excited about that. on the way out, I haven't drank alcohol in over 2 years. And but everybody else, of course, there, it's an all day thing and everybody drinks alcohol. I was walking down the stairs to go back to where the parking lot, which I park way far away because I'm cheap about that stuff. And so I go to take one of the stairs. And as you know, Aiden, from past shows, I'm terribly clumsy. And so in front of everybody, I do the like front splits, like down the stairs because I slip on a stair. And everybody looks at me like I am the drunkest person in the world for like doing the splits down the stairs. And of course I just recovered and was like, hey everybody, I'm okay, I'm all good, don't worry about me, and then ran off. But yeah, they were all pretty sure I was drunk as fuck. And not to mention that because weed is now legal in Canada, another funny part of the trip yesterday, you can tell you're outside a BC place and it is everywhere, man. They don't keep it indoors. Like, whoa, it is something. They're loving it.
Yeah, I know in California, like, there's a lot of, it has to be on private property. Like, it's not supposed to be outdoors. I wonder if Canada has that same restriction. I'm going to look that up right now.
They don't enforce it if they do. It's okay.
or at least not at that kind of event.
Yeah, this is outside. I will say it's outside of the actual, you can't smoke inside of the arena or the stadium. But yeah, right outside of the stadium. And people are like laughing about it. They're enjoying it, and everybody's doing well. Like, you know, nobody was like, everybody. Of course, the crazy anti-marijuana people would be like, "Oh, it's creating a bunch of problems." There were no problems. Everybody was having a great time. Even if this happened between matches, a guy gets over the he climbs onto the field, I can like sense the disturbance in the forest. I was looking at my phone and I can like sense something's going on. So I look down and there's a dude, nothing on but Speedo and shoes. And he's jumped over the barrier onto the field. He's in the end zone and the Speedo comes off. He's full naked except for shoes on. And he starts dancing to, by the way, Cotton Eye Joe by Rednecks.
Okay.
And you don't know that song, do you? You're making a face.
Like, I know Cotton Eye Joe. I'm just you know the Rednecks version. No, I don't.
Okay, that's crazy.
I mean, unless it's the normal version that I hear all the time. Like
maybe it might be the one. It might be the one you consider normal. Yeah, but anyways, so the reason why that's important to the story is because people like to say that song by Rednecks, Cotton Eye Joe, which I know is of course a remake of a song that's like ages old, but that version of it makes white people crazy. And sure enough, white dude, he is, so Cotton Eye Joe is playing, he takes off the Speedos, he's naked out in the middle of the field, he's whipping the Speedo around, and then he drops the Speedo, and he's dancing to Cotton Eye Joe in the middle of the field, and until you see the security guys come out, and I'm like, I don't know who I felt worse for, like he's going to get nailed, or the security guys who have to tackle this naked man. And then I realized the guy
just
really
wants to dance to Cotton Eye Joe.
Yeah, he just wanted to dance to Cotton Eye Joe. The guy I felt the worst for was the third guy involved in this. Why? Because okay. He had to go retrieve the Speedo and like hold it out in front of him.
You saw this in person?
Yes, I have the video. I'll send it to you.
Awesome! I look forward to checking it out.
As a sports commentator, because I've done sports commentary in the past, you're not supposed to share that stuff because it's like the unwritten rule, like you don't support it. But it was freaking awesome. I was laughing so hard. It was great. But anyway, so yeah, so that was my trip to Canada. I always love being up there. Beautiful country and great people. And they put on a great, great, great time up there as well. And so yeah, good times. Otherwise though, yeah, that was, we got the clocks have gone ahead. How are you dealing with that? All right.
Yeah, sure.
You haven't slept, so you don't even know.
Yeah, I honestly, like, I went to bed at like 2:30, close to 3, and I had a really like hype stream, like a lot of stuff happened, and so I was just sort of lying there processing it for like a while, and then all of a sudden it was, and then like I got up to like eat some spoonfuls of peanut butter because I was hungry and I cannot sleep when I'm hungry, and then the clock said 3 and I was like, okay, sure, yeah. I guess daylight savings time. Goodbye, yeah. Sleep.
I don't know exactly. So they're introducing the potential that British Columbia up in Canada, as well as Washington, I believe they said that they might potentially just leave daylight savings time forever on, so we would not switch back. What do you think of that?
I think that daylight savings time is like stupid.
So I like the attention because we get extra hour up here, which is nice. But I know
that you don't get an extra hour. It's just like the clocks. It's just like time is all.
Yeah, no, I get that. But I mean,
it's all bullshit. Everything's bullshit all the time.
Time is.
I don't know. It's unnecessary. It's potentially harmful, and it also makes it really hard to schedule streams because like I have viewers in like. Fucking England.
That's right.
Or too, like Australia, yeah. Who like don't have, or like places that just don't have daylight savings time. And now I'm like starting an hour earlier or an hour later, depending on what time of the year.
Actually, you're too. So my family in France, they actually set theirs. I don't know. I can't say for sure if this is on daylight savings time or on standard, but are setting them back. But they actually set theirs back or forward, or maybe both, at different times than we do. So for like a month, everything's totally fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, should be cray.
What are you thinking? Are you ready to dive into the jungle?
Yes, let's do it.
I'm ready. Let's play the birds. All right. So this week, we'll start with, like I said, we're going to have tons to talk about with the Democratic nominees as we move closer to 2020. So we'll just update everybody on who has announced. I'm sure there are other people who have announced, because I just realized this past week that there are way more people involved in this race. They'll probably never make it to the, you know, ballot.
There's so many people.
Right, but there
are. I honestly don't think that Tulsi has a point at this point, which is disappointing because she was one of my... Yeah. faves, but
she's actually, so her town hall, actually, I enjoyed it. I thought she did pretty good. But I don't think she's even got the donations to make it to the debate, because she's actively asking on Facebook right now and Twitter for donations so that she can get to the debate stage. In fact, Andrew Yang, who's made an appearance a few times, conversation here with us, he actually is very close to getting on the debate stage. I'm not sure if Tulsi will, and that's unfortunate, because I agree with you. I would love to see Tulsi debate, and I'm a fan of hers. So we shall see when it comes to that. But this week, Pete Buttigieg has announced that he's, or well, there's an exploratory committee. I don't believe he's officially announced, but he did have a town hall that a lot of people were very impressed with it. So the by the way, you have a fact about Pete Buttigieg. What is that fact, Aiden?
Oh yeah, his last name. Yeah, so it's actually Buttigieg.
Buttigieg.
Okay. Four different ways. Either you can think of it as either as Buttigieg, okay. Buttigieg, Buttigieg, Buttigieg. Buttigieg. So those are like the four different pronunciation options he gave on Twitter. But yeah, it says the CNN Politics article, which really hard-hitting facts right here. It says Buttigieg's name is Maltese and roughly translates to Lord of the Poultry.
Lord of the Poultry.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, Buttigieg. So I was saying more like butt, which is, I didn't mean that. That was, yeah, it's Buttigieg. Pete is, though, he, you know what, you said it best, like when you look at him, you said, oh my god, he's a baby, and he is, yeah, very, very young. 37 years old, doesn't look 37, but very popular in South Bend, Indiana, where he's the mayor, and
he looks like a real Stickler sitcom character, like in like Parks and Rec or like The Office. He seems like he'd be like the intern who just wants to get stuff done and enough with
that
these hijinks.
So true, you nailed it.
Exactly. He seems like a chill guy, like when I like, yeah, like hear him or like read his stuff, but like he just got that face.
Yeah, I, you know, and seems like a cool dude. He'd be the first openly gay president and nominee, I believe nominee too, ever. And so that's you know, that's something they've talked about in South Bend, Indiana. That's how much they like him. And by the way, it's sad that we have to say that, but South Bend, Indiana, not exactly the most progressive, or Indiana in general, not always the most progressive in those ways. And yet they've really accepted him and love him. And of course, you know, he's not going to have any trouble over on this coast, you know, with that. We're all completely, you know, down for that. But yeah, so I think so. If we're getting down to the other things about him that maybe are a little worrisome for progressive voters, supposedly his Medicare for All is, he's a little bit on the edge about that. He hasn't really come out and really talked about what his feelings are, but he hasn't come out and supported it. And on top of that, I had heard in the past that some of his environmental policies were questionable, but really when you look right now, he seems to have a pretty decent environmental record. So unless things come out, which they will, at this point, he's an interesting one, because a lot of people really do like him. But, you know, but also we're getting into, you know, Beto's in Iowa tonight, I believe, or maybe it's tomorrow. And they believe that means Beto's about to announce. And I don't know if this is the right time. I feel like we're already, like, moved along. Like, we kind of talked about that last week, where we kind of think it's going to be Bernie and Kamala and maybe dark horse like Cory Booker or Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, I think that I feel like in our circles where we're like, I feel like a lot of the people like I follow are tend to be hypercritical of presidential candidates, and then like even Bernie Sanders, I saw a lot of people saying Bernie Sanders shouldn't run, and then Bernie Sanders comes out and has this like amazing number of donations right off the bat, like and like same with Kamala Harris. I feel like I don't want to say that Beto doesn't have a chance right now. I want to be open to it, because I can. He had a lot. I know. I'm kind of contradicting myself from last week, but like I've just been reflecting on it a bit more. And yeah, I'm just distrustful of when I was trying to start breaking out of my filter bubble, and like I followed a lot of like news articles and opinion articles, but even those tend to be hypercritical of candidates and aren't necessarily reflective of the broader opinion. So I feel like I think that Beto could have a chance. We'll have to see like the actual stats, like once if he does announce that he's running. I think that he shouldn't. I think we have a crowded field. I don't know that there's anything that Beto could offer right now that isn't offered by other candidates to some extent. And I think that like he would be better served seeking other local offices and continuing to build his reputation as somebody who gets shit done for the people.
Yeah, I think the only thing I can see him offering, which is this kind of brings up a whole different part of the discussion, right? Is that he brings a likability factor that not a lot of candidates on either side really have, right? We haven't really seen in a while. Like, he's just a likable guy when you listen to him talk. And so the question is, are we still at a point in this country where, or just this world, by the way, because this tends to be something that can be worldly, where we like someone who we feel like we can relate to and we feel is a nice guy and a cool guy? Could that potentially win people over because the candidates so far are just not universally liked, whereas Beto seems to be universally liked around so many different groups of different types of people? Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I can see him bringing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I just, for me, like, I just really want to see some, like, numbers, you know? I want to see, like, how many donations is he raising? What is his social media reach like? Like, what are polls saying? Yeah, there's a lot of speculation right now. It's still really early in the game.
It's so early.
Like, really early.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, really, who makes it to the debates in June and July, that's going to be the defining factor, I think, inevitably, is, you know, who's on that stage. If you're not on that stage in the summer, then I don't think you have a shot down the road. So, you know, that's going to whittle the group down, I would imagine, by half on how they perform at the debates and how much time they get to talk, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But so this week Trump also unveiled his budget proposal, and so when you look at the proposal, there's not a whole lot that when you look at it that you go, this has any chance in hell of actually, you know, passing as it is, right? And in history, rarely do first proposals for budgets ever pass the way they are. You know, they're usually changed, and obviously lobbyists get involved, and there's this put in there and that put in there and whatever. But what I found interesting about it, because I'm you know, I think everybody's tired of talking about Trump, is that, you know, one of the things that the right is talking about, and like I've mentioned, even sometimes you hear centrist left talk about it as well, is that they're very, very obsessed with the fact that, you know, they what they call as what is the word they even use? Well, I mean, welfare programs is technical, but they actually had a word that to me is more of a dig than anything, essentially referring to those programs as, you know, handouts. But they want to strip anti-poverty programs, and they will propose strict new work requirements for able-bodied Americans across a range of welfare programs, including healthcare, housing, and nutrition assistance. Many Republicans said these programs are bloated with waste and discourage people from returning to work. But Democrats have fiercely opposed such requirements in the past, saying they penalize the poor and strip benefits from those in need. So the thing I find interesting about that from Republicans consistently is that this tends to be something that is always brought up, is that, you know, as handouts make people want to stay home and never work. When in all honesty, we've had a jobs problem in the sense of there's not enough jobs for the people who need work, right? In the past as well. Mm-hmm. So to insist that people don't want to work is crazy, considering that we haven't always had enough jobs for everyone. And if it was just that easy, where you could just, you know, live off of these government programs, then if it was just that easy, I truly do feel a lot of more people would be doing that. People, I think, you know, maybe call me optimistic, but I think the majority of people, especially in the United States, where even I've talked about how I feel that we have a toxic work culture here, I feel like even people here in the United States, they love to take pride in that they have, you know, that they're making their money and nobody has anything to say about it, and they can save it, spend it, do whatever they want with it when they get there. Now, obviously, we ran into a lot of problems here recently with, wage inequality and also the difference in wealth between those of us who are normal everyday people and the top 1% wealthy. But yeah, I don't know. I find it interesting that they want to cut anti-poverty programs. They want to make there be work requirements. But the question is, how are we going to just make that happen? You know, where if the jobs aren't always there, and this is something that, you know, we've talked about with universal basic income, why it might become something that is necessary because of automation. What exactly is the, because I guess it goes back to that whole thing where you'll see your Facebook friends who are more conservative and they'll post something like, we want to see drug tests for people on welfare, right? So my question is, what if somebody who is on welfare or somebody who is homeless tests positive? You don't give them money. How does that help anything if you don't give them welfare? They're not going to go out and say, oh, well, now you're not giving me welfare. I have to find a job and get clean. Republicans don't want safe injection sites. But so what do they exactly want to do to help? Are they okay with there being a homeless problem that is just and a poverty problem in this country? Because what exactly is the solution to all this?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I also think like just the drug testing thing, like it's like feels like it comes up every couple years or so, like as like a bigger issue. Drug testing costs money.
Yeah, exactly.
Like to regularly test people on welfare, it costs more money than it saves. And also people on welfare, like the welfare doesn't just benefit the individual who might have an addiction. It also benefits their kids and immediate family members. If you have a 5-year-old who's struggling with poverty and has a parent who's an addict and on welfare, like should the 5-year-old just starve because the parent can't get help? And also like addiction is a disease. Like this is a health issue. It's like it's a public health crisis. It's not a moral crisis. Anyways, except, well, I was just going to say like, okay, never mind. I was going to say like a moral crisis, like from like the Republican set. Mean.
you know, okay. I think the thing that bothers me the most is that they seem to acknowledge there's a problem, but their idea of and they're always telling us to be realistic and whatever, think realistic and blah blah blah, but their supposedly realistic ways of fixing these things just aren't realistic when you can't really come up with a plan for, I mean, because if you don't like the fact that there are homeless people, you know, if you're a business, small business in the community and they're sleeping underneath your awning or sometimes in a doorstop, on a stoop, whatever. I've heard it, all those things here locally where everybody, they're angry about it. The business owners are mad. You can't just do that. You got to be respectful of people, blah, blah, blah. So they obviously want the homeless issue to be dealt with. Yet anytime that you start to come up with anti-poverty ideas, including, by the way, especially one here that has had a lot of trouble getting traction, which is to build tiny homes or tiny home communities to at least give them a place to stay warm and be inside of, they don't like that either. So I don't know exactly what they want, because if you love to live in some sort of utopia where people just go, oh, you know what? You're right. I should take pride in what I do and I should go get a job and I should get off these drugs. This is easy as just saying I'm done, you know? And like you mentioned that it's not an actual, which it is an actual health issue. And we don't live in that sort of land. So you have to come up with realistic ways. It might not be the stuff that you love. It might not be optimal situations for you or optimal laws or things to do that you love, but we still have to do these things in order to take care of these problems. It's not always going to be sexy. It's not always going to be, ooh, look at this. We're going to vote on this. This is great. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes you have to just make realistic decisions. And the truth is that we're always going to have these problems, especially if there is wage inequality, or, you know, and such a huge you know, a huge, huge, what's the word I'm looking for? My gosh. There's a huge gap. There we go. In how much, you know, the wealthy make and how much we make. And, you know, it's funny you brought up the kids as well. And because not everybody, by the way, who's on welfare is homeless. I'm not trying to say that either. Not everybody who is who requires any sort of government assistance is necessarily homeless. It's just one large problem we're dealing with right now. But no, I mean, when places like, you know, McDonald's, Walmart, whatever, won't pay their customers a livable wage, those people are on welfare too, because they have to be, you know. Yeah. and so because they can hardly make it. On top of that, I saw something today regarding where we're going to start to introduce new ideas. And by the way, nothing's set in stone of what it would be, but the several different cities, states, and whatnot have talked about how children have the right to a home, even if adults don't. Which, on the outside, you go, okay, well, nobody wants to see a kid suffering in a homeless situation, right? But there's another part to that, which is basically we're not going to deal with the homeless situation for everybody. Instead, we're going to tug on the heartstrings of everyday people, make sure the kids go to other families, essentially, like we've even seen happen at the border when those kids were stripped away from their families. And basically, good luck, you're never going to see your kids again, even if, you know, you I think that it's, instead of tackling an actual problem, now we're deciding that, oh, splitting up families is going to be the best way to deal with it, because that way at least the kids aren't going to get hurt by it. And again, nobody wants to see the kids get hurt by it, but I'd rather see these families helped than have them be split up and while one side suffers and the other side is now with a different family.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was so much research that was being, like, shared about the effects, the traumatic effects of separating kids from parents, especially at a young age. I mean, like, it just, I feel like, are we never going to learn anything from from this?
But that's just the problem, is that a lot of times I think that the government feels they know what's best for us. you know, and you know, the Republicans love to say that about socialism. And don't get me wrong, there are aspects to socialism. Just because I like the idea of democratic socialism doesn't mean I think every aspect of anything is great. But they love to shove that as the problem with socialism, yet the Republicans continually, on a daily basis, think they know better for everyday Americans, including, by the way, the fact that they think having a wealthy 1% of people, 1% of the population, is better for workers, which is, you know, just laughable. But yeah, so I find it all very, very, actually, it's a little scary, to be honest, how things are being dealt with. And just the fact, I think, that every time we talk about a budget proposal, anti-poverty programs are always the first to seem to, especially when the Republicans are talking, the first to potentially take it in the nuts. And I don't see the logic in that whatsoever, especially since at some point there's going to be problems within the homeless community, where it's either going to end up with where they're in jail, one, or two, they are in the hospital because something really bad is wrong, and they're not going to be able to pay for the hospital bills. They're not, so it's going to fall on taxpayers anyways, no matter what. Mm-hmm. You know, so if we can, at least, it's never going to be perfect, but if there's anti-poverty programs out there, then at least we're helping, hopefully, a portion of them, and hopefully if they start to continue to get better and better, and we continue to build upon them, hopefully it will someday, you know, make an even larger dent on an unfortunate problem. And like you mentioned too, I mean, on the other side of things, if they would just allow us to have fair wages for employees, you know, in this country, maybe we wouldn't have to deal with there wouldn't be families who have to be on welfare and food stamps because they can't afford it. It's not their fault, but yet they will continually shame anybody who are on those programs, which again is just disgusting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So another bit of news this week, that, or the made news, was not political so much, but it's something that is very much discussion in politics. Terry Crews, who a lot of people would know him off of the Old Spice commercials, he's one of the lead actors in, or one of, or I guess supporting cast, I should say, on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And his name is Terry on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And also some people during the Me Too movement might know of him as that he came out with his experience of being sexually assaulted by a higher up. And he very much was very supportive of the movement and kind of led the charge for the fact that even, you know, men have had to deal with sexual assault in those ways.
Yeah.
But he, this week, he had, there was a discussion involving basically the raising of kids by two moms. And they had mentioned something along the lines of that a child doesn't have to have a paternal figure necessarily to grow up fine. And he took offense to that and said that two women talking about it would have no idea what a boy needs growing up. And said that he thinks that one of the most important things for a boy growing up is to have both a maternal and paternal figure. He has, of course, since apologized. He talked to a co-star, Stephanie Beatriz, who is part of the LGBTQ community. And he said that obviously he needed to have that discussion and, you know, have his eyes opened up to something that he obviously was closed-minded to before. But so it's not so much about Terry, but this is something that you still hear continually on, you know, yeah, all the time. You have experience with it because you were raised by two moms.
Yeah. And as are both of my younger brothers, you are fully functioning, right, like male adults.
Right. How do we, I mean, Are we, besides these setbacks, are we moving ahead? Do you feel, I mean, with you kind of having that firsthand perspective, because obviously I feel like sometimes we're doing better, sometimes we're doing worse, but I haven't had that sort of perspective. Do you believe though, when you look at it, are we moving ahead as time goes on, or are we still stuck in this mud where people believe that there is a, that there has to be this old time, you know, vision, Rockwell painting of, you know, a, mom and a dad with kids?
Yeah. I think that that's like a big question. It's really context dependent. I don't know that I would feel comfortable asking about like the whole of the culture. Mm-hmm. I would say that I think that Terry Crews's position, I think, was understandable in that he was talking from his personal experience, having a male father figure show him like what it means to be a good man was really important. I don't think it was a father figure, but having a male figure or role model show how he should be a man is important. Having male role models is important, essentially. And I think that there's this idea that if a person is raised in a family that has two moms or two dads, that the kid doesn't have any role models necessarily. My younger brothers, they've had male role models. They've had uncles and grandparents and granddads and family friends and teachers and politicians, like lots of people to look up to show them, to guide them. I think that this idea that like just because you don't have a father figure in the home means that you aren't getting a role model is just, it's not like the reality of how a home really operates. But if it's how his home operated, I don't know enough about his personal life and his history to speak about that, but I can see how like you could make that sort of false comparison. Like, because my role model was a father, every kid needs a father. It's just sort of it's like a fallacy that doesn't apply on a broader cultural scale.
Well, I think for me, the part that kind of interests me, right, is that we always talk about the problems with toxic masculinity in this country, right? And again, I'm not referring necessarily to Terry here, because it sounds like he spoke out of something emotional for him and mm-hmm. then, you know, had a discussion, which, by the way, nobody should ever fault that, because he at least had that discussion the next day. And although I might look at it and go, why were you under that assumption the day before that? That seems like such an old school way to be thinking about things. At least he did listen, and it seems like he's trying to learn, right, and be better. So this is more just in general, But it's interesting because I have a friend who she calls the whenever I say, you know, well, you know, guy, men need to do a better job of raising their kids, because that sometimes is the problem, is that there is a paternal figure sometimes, and men in this, yeah, a lot of men have this habit of turning boys into monsters, whether knowingly or unknowingly. Now, yeah, my friend, though, she refers to some what she's known as the immaculate fuckboy, which a guy who was raised by a very good mom, did not have a dad, and yet still turned out to be the you know, epitome of toxic masculinity. And I think what's interesting in my experience is that my dad was very different from most dads, in the sense that he was not the typical toxic male. He was not somebody who, I've been around guys and other fathers who have, you know, treated, whether you're in middle school up to high school, treated women essentially as a something to pursue, right? And it is predatory almost, and that's why I think sometimes we run into that problem in our culture now. And my dad was not like that ever. Never had that sort of outlook on things, and he was, and I truly believe that my brother and I turned out to be better people because of that, because we didn't have somebody who was constantly making us feel like, as men, we needed to be some sort of, you know, caveman provider.
Yeah,
get yourself the wife one day, and you know, and you better make more money than her, kind of thing. You know, kind of bullshit. And I credit my dad for that, is that he was never like that. And even though we were around lots of guys who were, you know, and I mean, and that's just inevitable. You will grow up around tons of different personalities. You know, of course, and at the end of the day, my mom, we lived on a farm. My mom was always home with us. And so we had, for the most part, a maternal influence, you know, including our grandmother, who was always there. And, you know, I don't think I think it shocks me that I know a lot of people who have been raised by two dads, two moms, including yourself. And there's literally, you know, no, I mean, of course, every person is different, but there's nothing that I've ever looked at and gone, oh my gosh, you can tell they were raised this way and not that way. Because inevitably, people are also going to, hopefully, if they are raised right, grow up to be their own person. And that's really, at the end of the day, all that matters. And so I just, yeah, it's unfortunate, I think, that we're still talking about. But I mean, then again, good that we're discussing, you know, people like Terry in this case, are at least having discussions with people who have more experience the other way, and hopefully can open everybody's eyes to how ridiculous that sort of idea might be.
Agreed. The other thing, well, one quick thing also is just related to like when it comes to gender roles, like having same-sex parents is like one of the, or like be like having a society with more same-sex parents is like one of the best ways to break down gender roles. Because like when I was growing up, like one of my moms did most of the cooking, but she also did most of the yard work. She mowed the lawn, she did the brunt of that. My other mom like drove us to and from like doctor's appointments and would like sew us like costumes and do some like more of the laundry. But like there's no like strict divide. There's no like these are male tasks and these are female tasks. It's down to like what do you like doing more, like what's your preference, like what's easier for you, what's like better for our schedules. Like there's no, it's and then, and like, if you have like two dads, like it's the same thing. You have to, if you are a kid growing up with two male father figures, you have to see like your dad's doing the cooking, doing the laundry, doing all of these like traditionally feminine gender roles. And so, I mean, like, it's. I think that like Terry Crews is somebody I have a lot of respect for. And I don't fault him for like sort of misapplying his personal experience to this broader context, but I know that he is somebody who has spoken out about toxic masculinity a lot.
Right.
And about like the pressures we put women under, and has he's done a lot of great work in trying to fight that. And I think that, like, if you could see same-sex parents as a really important part of breaking those gender roles and breaking toxic masculinity down further, I think that, like, I think that's something he would be really behind.
Yeah, no, me too. And I think that I think that probably is why initially it was so maybe disappointing at first, is because of what you just said, right? Is that he's been somebody who's been outspoken about, and you just felt like it was kind of that thing where you're like, okay, dude, that we just didn't expect that, right? But you know, it's funny too that you bring it up, because I still find there is that generational gap where you have the generation who still believes that in a gay marriage that there is, or lesbian marriage, that there is a male and female of, you know, right? That's still this like concept, which seems so ridiculous to me, because I think, because even in this day and age, even with a heterosexual relationship, the roles aren't the same as they were back in the day for there being, you know, strict gender roles, right? Like there are guys who do some of the, what would traditionally be the role of the wife. There are wives who do what would traditionally would be the role of the husband. And so I think probably for this generation, it's harder for us to understand where that even comes from. But yet there is still a generation out there, namely, I guess, baby boomers and before that, probably not every baby boomer, but the early baby boomers and before that, who still believe that they're traditionally just is that with male and female relationships as well as same sex relationships. So it is still that just a generation you don't like. I hate to use that as an excuse, but it sure does happen. What else do we have today? Well, we're going to talk about the fact that there are so I want to talk about, actually, because I talked about this movie a lot and people are going to get tired of me talking about it, but I love it so much I'm going to keep talking about it until the until I can't stop talking about it anymore. But I did want people to check out HonaldFoundation.org. It's H-O-N. And that's, we'll have this in the description anyways. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, you should spell that, because I did not spell it right.
Right. So H-O-N-N-O-L-D foundation.org. It'll be in the description for this, but for Aiden.
Yeah.
And sorry. The reason why I want to bring this up is because there are so many, and I mean, it happened in the past too, don't get me wrong, but I think it's so inspiring right now that we have filmmakers, athletes, et cetera, singers, go down the list, who are using their platform to also do something good. And Free Solo, if nobody has seen it, it was, of course, it won an Oscar. It's about Alex Honnold's his ascent of El Capitan in California and Yosemite Valley. He did it without ropes, just climbed the 3,000 plus foot peak, just his hands, and that was it, and some chalk. And from somebody, by the way, who climbs like boulders, which is like 20 feet off the ground, is fucking terrifying. Just, you know, because when you fall from 20 feet, it's scary. When you fall from 3,000 feet, you're dead. Honnold Foundation, though, so he actually started this as an environmental foundation. It envisions a world where all people have equal access to opportunity and live in balance with the environment. They believe in solar as a proven environmentally sound solution to global energy poverty, and they award grants to bold and ethical organizations driving innovation in the solar industry, which I think that's awesome to hear that they are doing those sorts of things. He talks about it in his documentary. The documentary, by the way, is great. It's not just about his climb. It's not just about climbing. It's also about his relationship with his girlfriend, who, you know, she met him knowing fully well what he does, but that it's a tough relationship to be in when your, you know, boyfriend is climbing up a giant rock face without ropes on. But so the Honnold Foundation, a lot of great, great people out there doing great things with their movies, or with their art, I should say, and using that as a way to make things better. That is worth checking out. The movie was actually on National Geographic last weekend, I believe. And you can now not even have to pirate it or go see it in theaters. It's on TV worth checking out, and then checking out HonoldFoundation.org. Yeah, so what else do you have? What do you have anything else you want to talk about this week, Aiden?
Nothing, but I was just on the Honnold's Wikipedia page. He is also a vegetarian. So
yes, he is. Yes, he is. He had said that he made the switch. I think he actually said quite a while ago, if I remember in the movie right. But he also does not drink. And
yeah, he doesn't drink or do caffeine.
Yeah.
He says basically, I'm a Mormon except for the God thing.
Yeah.
It's a good Are Mormons vegetarians?
No.
Okay. I don't Anyways.
Not the Mormons I've known.
Yeah, you said you wanted to talk about this, and so I like pulled up like his information, and there were some photos of the free solo climb, and I was like literally sweating a little bit.
What's your biggest like fear?
What is my biggest fear?
Yeah, like what is your like when it comes to, like heights and stuff? Are you scared of heights or that kind of thing? Or
I mean, like, if I'm in a place, if I'm like high in a place, but it's like safe,
yeah.
Whether it's like maybe like at the top of a tower or like something, like I'm usually not like an issue. It's not an issue, but I'm like, it's just, why would you do that? Like, why would you like climb like fucking 3,000-foot rock without, like, why would you do that? That's like it stresses me out to see that, but only because it's just a dumb thing to do. I mean, it's an amazing thing of like.
Yeah.
Amazing feat of athleticism and stuff, but it's like, why?
Well, it's a really good question because, you know, we were talking about this actually, not you and I, but I was talking about it with somebody where I was saying that, you know, there are a lot of different things out there that seem really, really crazy to some people, not to others, right? Like for me, I'm going to just admit it here. So I like junk TV and I watch The Bachelor, right? And one of the dates that they did this year, the girl surprises him with the fact they're going skydiving. Now, if I was going on a date and I go and I'm being driven to the date and she's like, by the way, we're skydiving, I would say, no fucking way. And I would turn around. Like, I don't care if it's on ABC. I don't care if it's on fucking HBO. I am not doing it, okay? Like, I do not need to jump out of a perfectly fine airplane. Maybe I'll change my mind one day, but right now, I have no wanting to jump out of an airplane.
Even with skydiving, like, there's safety features in place, you know?
Oh, trust like, me, I would not do what Alex Honnold is doing either.
I just don't get it. I just don't get why. Like, why is that something you need to do? And it's, like, cool, like, great athleticism, but, like, I'm just so worried, like, a lot of people are probably gonna get into this like extremely dangerous hobby, like, but like, oh, but and maybe not even do it a safe way. And it's just like, why would you provoke that? There's no reason to it. Like, why? Like, what are you accomplishing?
There's no safe way.
But you could do it. You could have like, if he had like any sort of safety gear, like it would still take the same amount of athleticism to do it. It just wouldn't be dumb. if he had like a rope attached to him, like would that make the actual, like would it take any less strength to do it?
That's a good question, because you're right. But so if you watch the movie, which the fact that you said you were sweating just looking at some of the pictures, probably
I'm,
not a good
I'm
idea.
Not watching the damn movie, okay? I get that you like the movie, I'm not watching the movie.
So but he does like do the climb with ropes, okay, at other times before he does it without ropes. So I guess the feeling is that when you do it without ropes, there's an element of perfection that comes into it, because you know you have to be perfect, because literally if you slip, you're like, you know, there's no coming back. There's no, oh, I might just be crippled. No, you're dead.
But like, you have to do it perfectly. If you do it the other times, you have to do it perfectly anyways. Well, it's just showing off. It's just showing off the fact that it's perfect. It's like, it's, or like drawing more attention to the own feet, like to your own feet. Like if there's the safety feature in place where like, if you mess up, you'll fall, but you won't die. Like if you are able to complete the climb without falling, you did it perfectly. Okay. Like you did it.
Yes. Yes. That is true. But they're going to say, oh, you still knew you would be potentially caught by the rope.
How does that make a difference? It doesn't change the amount of muscular strength it takes to climb the damn rock. Okay? Yeah. Like, it doesn't change that. Like,
what I will say about him is that this is what makes it crazy, right? Is it the guy, like, if you kind of see interviews with him, like, he is a different personality, right? Like, he is, doesn't really smile a lot. He's kind of in his head. He said, you know, stuff like saying "I love you" to people is hard for him. His family never really said it growing up, and yet he gets to the top of the of El Cap, and you know, he's and the first time you see this huge smile on his face, and I realize because he just realized that he just, you know, defied all the laws of everything. But I mean, like, that's what he loves. Like, he's been, you know, free solo climbing his whole life, and to me it seems absolutely nuts, because like I said, I am somebody who has climbed. And it's scary to just like I don't care if you slip from like 10 feet up, and by the way, I'll mind you, at the climbing gym I used to go to, like, you have like padding down below you, so you can't get hurt, right? It's, I mean, you could hurt yourself, but not anything bad. It's still like, you, it's scary when you fall, you know, like, you're like, no, I'm not doing this, you know, right, sort of thing. And then boom. And trust me, I've done it a few times, and it still hurts. But I can't imagine. Like, I just really can't. The scariest thing that I've done in the sense of climbing is that I free climbed, and it wasn't even considered a free climb because it's like the top of a mountain, so it's technically considered a scramble. It's just a very, very steep grade scramble, and it's a 250-foot drop from where I was. So you fall and you're dead. And I did that without ropes to get to the summit because I didn't realize that. It was that steep, and I was like, well, I'm not going to stop now. And like that, I wasn't scared doing it. But when I realized what I had just done afterwards, I was like, that was really stupid, man. Like, if you would have slipped, you were dead, you know? And so I could never do what he, I mean, it's crazy what he does, but, I don't know what time we're at. I was going to actually bring something up just because I brought up The Bachelor that I want to know your opinion. Yeah, well, let's do it. Why not? So I want to know your opinion on this, okay? Because this is a pet peeve of mine.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily about The Bachelor. It's just that something that happened in The Bachelor that annoys me about every day. I want to know your opinion about it because you tend to be more like, you know, what's the right word? Like, you're more thoughtful. You don't have as many, you know, like, oh, I'm annoyed by this. So I even have friends who do this, right? So that's why it's not specific to a junk reality TV show. Where, like, we saw this thing where where men ask a father permission, there we go, to marry their daughter. And that was like that's been like a big discussion now because, you know, because like two fathers told him no, you know, they weren't ready to give him permission. Or their blessing, whatever you want to call it. And so I want to know, because I hate the, like, I will, if a woman wants, you know, she's still traditional to a point where she expects that I would ask a father for permission, I hate the idea of that just because it seems to me like almost like the father owns her and is like saying, oh, you have permission to own her now. But like, am I missing something here, or is it okay to be as outraged about this as I am?
I mean, I think that it's definitely like a holdover from that time. I think that like there's ways that you can frame it in your head to be more okay with it. I think that if you're asking the parents as a whole, like both parents instead of just the father, I think that like it's easier for me to frame it as, hey, can I have your blessing? Because I want to make sure we're on good terms and that like, because you're obviously an important person in your daughter's life. Is this okay with you so that we can like be a family and not just some rando marrying? Like, I feel like if it's more about like relationship building and not some just permission, I feel like you could go deeper with it. I mean, a part of it is like people like just like tradition, like regardless of whether or not something started in a question, it started in a period when it was more dehumanizing. Like the fact that it's just something that people do is just reason enough. Like it doesn't matter like what the implications are for some people. So there's some people who value ritual and tradition, and I mean, like, I can understand that to some extent. Like some people like the idea of seeing themselves as a link in a chain, and the idea of breaking that chain is stressful. Like they want to see themselves like more as like, it's more of like a community mindset in terms of like this is the way it's been done before, I just want to carry that on regardless, but like without thinking like the deeper level of like what does that mean for me. And a lot of people don't want to be the people to like shake the boat, you know, in their families. But
I feel like, I guess, because I think it also goes back to a time people were marrying when they were younger too, you know? And
yeah,
I wonder if, like, now, if you're like in your 30s, like, I feel like it's just, it's up to the guy and the woman. That's it. But that being said, I do understand what you're saying too about making sure you're on good terms with the parents. So do you think that it's safe to say that rather than asking permission or for a blessing, whatever, that instead you say, hey, I just wanted to let you know I'm going to be doing this weekend, this whatever, that way they know, hey, yeah, he's going to be. And if they want to object, you didn't necessarily ask for their opinion, so that way you don't have to be like, because imagine too, like, remember that like stupid song by Magic called Why You Have to Be So whatever, what was that? That was a terrible song.
Why You Have to Be So Rude.
Thank you. Rude. Yeah, I was gonna say song. Yeah, I was gonna say mean, but that was
terrible. That was gonna be in my head all day, so thank you for that.
But I mean, it's like, and then he's like mad that the guy said no. But I mean, like, if you're going to be the idiot who asks, like, you should probably be ready for either answer, right? But anyways, so I was gonna say, doesn't it make more sense, I guess, would it be, do you think it's okay then for some to, instead of just be like, okay, so we're on the same page, just so you know, this is what I'm doing. They can object if they want to, but you're saying, well, I wasn't asking, I was just saying to let you know, you know?
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're not ready to take their answer into consideration anyways, what's the point of it? But I mean, it's weird, because, like I say, I have a problem with, and I could be, and this is just a personal thing, but like, I don't like the whole, like, taking the guy's name either. Like, I think that's, I would hope that whoever I'm with,
I'm not gonna take anyone's name, like,
yeah, I think, okay, well, I, yes, you know, I hate that thought. Like, it's like, why do I feel like my last name should mean so much that she has to change her name to my last? It's just awful. I hate it. And
I've heard of people who like women who like hate their last name, and partially want to get married to change it. including people who like get divorced but don't change back to their birth name because they hate that they're like, I have a reason. And at that point, just change your name. Like, you don't have to have a reason to change your name. You could just go, if you could afford a few $100 to change your name, you could do it.
Can you imagine hating your last name so much that even divorcing yourself from a guy and you still kept his name over your name? That is hate for a name. But it does happen. I've seen it actually happen. I hate the idea of it. I really want to like break out of these things. Like, I just hate it.
Yeah.
And
I think that we are more and more, but
yeah, although it's surprising, because like, there's like, for like the one that kind of like surprised me, because I'm a soccer fan, and like Julie Johnson had made her whole life off of her name as one of the top U.S. soccer players, and she married football player Zach Ertz, and he's always been very, very cool about the fact that he's like, hey, she's the one who's, you know, the talent in the family, basically. And but like, she immediately changed her, you know, her last name to Ertz, and she's got Ertz on the back of her jersey. And that's always crazy to me, because you would think in that case where they're famous off of their actual, you know, their name, you'd think that you wouldn't want to change your name, right? Because then people don't recognize it as, you know, easy. So you have even that happening there, right? But, so it's crazy me to see that happen. Obviously, it's everybody's personal decision. I'm not saying that it should be against the law or whatever. You know, I just mean that I hate it. Like, if anything, yeah, my last name sucks. Maybe I should just take the, take whoever's
name. Your name's fine.
But but I mean, that's the other thing though too. You mentioned, you know, though, you can just change your name. That's the other part of it though too, right? Is that it, you do have to, like, if you're a woman who changes your name because of to your husband's last name, you then have to change literally everything, like your driver's license.
I actually did change my name.
Yeah.
My Aiden isn't my birth name. Neither is Wood. I changed it when I was 18. Cause
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Most people, I don't say.
Yeah.
Like, talk about it very often. But I mean, like you have to change a lot, and it's kind of a hassle. Yeah. Like, that's also another. I'm like, I took a lot of time to like pick out like this name. Yeah, like, yeah, I'm not gonna just.
Yeah. That's great though. That's great. I don't know. I really would love to move on from that kind of stuff, but
yeah.
I know I'm probably like offending like even my family if they don't listen. Who am I kidding? But yeah, because they're gonna be like, oh, really? That's what you think of us? Oh yeah, actually, no. I mean, like, it's a personal decision, but I don't get it. I do not get it. Oh boy. Well, this is fun as always. Aiden, though, you've got we talked about your family and now your name. But you've got the podcast going on. You're on episode 3 right now of
Hopefully gonna be releasing episode 3 tonight. I need to go and go through the entire thing, because I mean, like, I spend a lot of time editing this. My podcast, it's more of like a crafted podcast, right. As opposed to, I mean, I think current events podcast, you can't really put that level of editing into it, because you got to be current, you got to just release it. Mm-hmm. But the one I'm doing is more about like a personal story that I'm trying to like
more of a storytelling kind of narrative.
Yeah, I've probably spent like 20 hours this weekend editing it, and I'm probably gonna spend another few hours editing it tonight. And I'm also still working on a crossword puzzle tonight after this meeting is over, so it's going to be I'm gonna be burning the midnight computer battery on this one. But anyways, yeah, that's besides the point. The point is, the podcast name is Dibs Welcome to the Family. That's Dibs, D-I-B-S, and Welcome to the Family. And it's the podcast about people who are conceived using the same sperm donor. It's about sperm donation and also non-traditional families in general, and like our society's changing definition of families. And so I was conceived using a sperm donor and raised by two women. And so like the first episode, I just interviewed my mom, and the second interview, I interviewed my brother. But then I'm going to be interviewing my dibblings. And a dibbling is a portmanteau of donor sibling, and it refers to people who were conceived using the same sperm donor. And so like I have more than 20 dibblings who were conceived using the same sperm donor, but who grew up as strangers that I've been getting to know these past couple years. So I'm going to be like telling some of their stories. And this next episode is going to be released tonight. So if you guys could go give it a listen, that would be awesome.
Nice. And it is on,
It's on Apple Podcasts, aka iTunes. It's also on Spotify right now. It's also on Podcoin, Overcast, and Stitcher. So nice. That's all of the apps.
And definitely listen to a change of pace too. If you've listened to, of course, this podcast as well as my other podcast, Aiden's is a little more of a change of pace, a little more like it's kind of narrative. That's a good way to put it, right? Kind of more
narrative. Yeah.
And yeah, it's great to listen to, and also a little shorter too. So if you have, if you're not as into the marathons that we sometimes do here,
first episode's only 15 minutes. So if you have 15 minutes, out of your schedule.
If you're into some music as well, like we always say, you can go check out the Lemonade Magazine podcast as well, which is my other venture here. We've got interviews, or I've got interviews, I should say, with, usually musicians. Sometimes other actors, actresses, but usually artists, as well as new songs each week. So Lemonade Magazine podcast, it's on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Podcoin as well. And then, of course, like Aiden just said, Dibs, Welcome to the Family. And go subscribe to those as well and leave ratings and comments and all that good stuff. And of course, Conservationist Conversationalist, if you can subscribe to us on Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or Podcoin or Spotify, or I'm not sure. Are we on those other ones you were talking about?
Spotify or Stitch? Oh, okay. So Overcast, and there's a few other podcast apps. They just use the iTunes API, like the iTunes. They just use the iTunes database. Yeah, but then each app like is different in that it offers its own features, but it mostly just relies on the iTunes database.
Okay.
And then, yeah, then Stitcher, I don't know if you've applied to Stitcher yet, but I think that Stitcher you have to submit it to.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have to look into that. So we should be on Overcast then. And, you can check us out there. And, thank you as always for joining us. We'll be back next Tuesday with more of everything going on in this world and probably then some. Aiden, thank you as always for the conversation. It was great. And talk to you soon.
Yeah, peace.
All right. Stay dope.